Welcome to this Market Commentator podcast, MoneyWeb's weekly podcast of interviews with leading investment professionals. My guest this week is Andrew Didburner. He is the CIO of Cannon Asset Managers. Andrew, welcome to the show. We've seen a pretty significant downturn in the market recently, not only in South Africa, but all over the world. We've seen the Dow, you know, fall around 15%, the Nasdaq as well. Significant declines there, mostly based on growth concerns. And emerging markets have also become, you know, persona non grata in many ways. But let's start with international markets. Where do you think we are heading?
Thanks, Rick. It's good to be here. It's a question that, yeah, I don't like being asked because invariably I'll be wrong if I give my view over 1 year what's going to happen over 2016. I think what we are seeing is, you know, this very much risk off. Investors are, you know, there's volatility around. Investors are incredibly nervous. And, I mean, we just look at some of the bond yields, the sovereign bond yields around the world. I mean, the Japanese 10-year bond, you know, the yield is now negative or went negative this week. You know, those are crazy moves or market moves. So there's obviously volatility around. Volatility is not to be confused with risk. We think when there's volatility, it very often provides opportunities to investors. So I wouldn't be scared of the volatility. I think you've got to take very much a long-term view in this market. Trying to guess what's going to happen over the next 12 months is incredibly difficult. Having said that, we undoubtedly in a low-growth environment. Emerging markets, yeah, they have come under pressure. We are seeing GDP growth rates lower. The Chinese number that they printed is not believable. They're good at manufacturing a lot of things, including their GDP number. But I think that still sits around 4%, which is higher than developed market GDP growth. So whilst we are in a lower growth environment, which obviously impacts company earnings around the world, so we're not going to see these massive earnings numbers coming out of the US at the moment, or we're not seeing them. So, you know, I think you can expect muted returns, but as I say, you've got to take a long-term view.
But it, you know, in the South African market is slightly different. Obviously, we're an emerging market, and, you know, one of the, you know, we've seen a sharp sell down in recent times. How much of that is local economic conditions, and how much is it the emerging market story?
Look, I think the South African market's a strange animal in that you've got a small number of very big companies that impact the All Share Index, and those are the usual suspects of your Naspers, your SAB Millers, Richemont's, a few diversified miners, although they're not that big anymore. So it's a bit of a strange animal. So when you see the market coming off, you've actually got to look and see what's, you know, what's been falling and what hasn't been falling. And over recent times, or recent years rather, we've seen the multinational global diversified companies holding up really well. And that's on the back of, you know, their rand hedge businesses as well. So rand weakness does help them when you convert those numbers in, or their earnings and their share prices of the dual listeds into rands. Obviously, a weak rand helps them. But then also your locally facing industrials, which are very much tied to economic growth. And as we know, our economic growth this year is between probably closer to 0.5, but the estimates, the SARB estimates, between 0.5% and 1%. Mm. So in a low, you know, our economic growth is struggling, and likewise the locally facing industrial companies have struggled. And you just look at the valuations. I mean, a lot of these businesses sit on, you know, trailing PE multiples of under 10 times, which is incredibly cheap. And that would indicate that they're priced for zero earnings growth.
Before we get to the individual stocks, we have seen in the past few months significant outflows from foreign investors. I think I saw a study from APSA, which said $16 billion a month for the past 3 months. David Shapiro also remarked on the SAFM market update not too long ago that a lot of investors are selling out of specific stocks like Naspers based on fears of emerging markets. Are you seeing that? And does that not create maybe an overhang on some of those big industrial shares you've mentioned earlier that do actually earn a lot of money overseas?
You're 100% right there. You know, we obviously seen the same thing that everyone else has seen. I think January we saw equity outflows, foreign equity outflows of between 11 or 12 billion rand, which is quite significant. You know, there's a definite risk there. It's something that we've paid specific attention to try and avoid. Avoiding companies that are trading on high multiples, that have elevated earnings growth, so at the peak of the earnings cycle, and then that have foreign ownership. And unfortunately, a lot of those multinational businesses that I alluded to earlier are perfect examples of this. So here you sit with a number of retailers as well. You mentioned Naspers, that have huge foreign ownership, and you look at the likes of a Mr. Price, for instance. You know, so buying a share that's on elevated multiples, Mr. Price a year ago had a PE of over 30 times. Their earnings, so at the peak of their cycle, they had big foreign ownership. And the minute that disappoint, they don't have to produce bad earnings, they just got to disappoint the market. And you've seen what happens. Mr. Price goes from 270 Rand to 150 Rand in a very short space of time. Then there's obviously, you know, that aside, you can look at the political risk and also removing foreigners wanting to take money away from emerging markets. And South Africa sits in there. So, you know, that obviously will affect the likes of your Naspers that are, you know, have a huge foreign ownership base. So that's a definite risk and something that as an investor you need to be aware of.
But of course, when foreigners sell the holding, somebody needs to buy it. Do you know who is actually buying some some of those significant stakes in those companies?
Look, a lot of those companies are, you know, high quality businesses. They're exceptionally well run. You know, you don't end up with huge foreign ownership and on multiples that they have been on or valuations that they have been on if you're a poor quality business. So as you sell off, there's, you know, I don't know exactly who's buying them. As from a deep value point of view, we're definitely not buying them right now. But, you know, in the future, they could become very attractive to us. But obviously, you know, as they sell off, there's appetite for other investors who see an opportunity to pick up a high quality business. But not on the elevated multiples that they used to be on. You know, and just because foreigners are owning them doesn't change the fact that these are still good businesses. So, you know, if you're going to buy it for the long term and you believe that the valuation is not too demanding, you know, why not go in?
When will Canon, you know, start to become a buyer in this market? At what levels do you think is the bottom?
I wish I knew where the bottom was. If I knew that, I don't think I'd need to work. But Canon is buying in this market. We're just not buying, you know, some of these companies that we've just spoken about. We are a deep value manager. So we're looking for, you know, companies that are what we would say are high quality businesses, and, you know, high quality being good management. You know, they've got an economic moat, or they've got, you know, IP, intellectual property, or something of the sort. They've shown a history of you know, strong earnings growth, or being able to see through cycles. And like a good company or good case in point would be the likes of a Wilson Bailey Homes. When you look at the construction sector, which has been in the doldrums, you've got Wilson Bailey Homes, who, you know, over many years have, you know, delivered superb results.
And they're not that linked to the local market.
They obviously are linked to the local construction market, but then they've obviously got their Australian business. They've got operations up in Africa. But there's a case of an industry that has struggled since 2008, 2009, where you've seen the likes of Avenge, Murray and Roberts, you know, that used to be in the top 40 index. You know, now I think they battle to be in the small cap index. But you've seen Wilson Bailey Homes have weathered the storm. You know, they've always had a strong balance sheet. So there's a case of a high quality business that offers value, but it's just in a poor industry at the moment. And, you know, if you've got the patience to ride it out, we would expect it to, you know, to get back to where it was 10 years ago. You know, the price hasn't fallen, so we haven't lost, or there hasn't been a permanent destruction of capital there. So those are the sorts of businesses that Canon's looking at buying at the moment.
Many of the value investors have looked at the commodity sector. Obviously, there are companies that are showing a lot of value. What is your view on the commodity sector? And are there counters you are looking at the levels they are trading at now?
I was afraid you were going to ask me that question. I think with hindsight, resources are very difficult for any investment manager to try and value. The trailing numbers mean very little. They're highly linked to the commodity cycle. So whilst they might appear to be offering value, they actually might be exceptionally expensive. And I think that was the mistake that a lot of people made, 4 or 5 years ago. And I'll include ourselves in that as well. We did go overweight resources a number of years ago because they appeared to be attractive. And obviously with hindsight, that call was incorrect. You need to be pragmatic. You need to, admit your mistakes and be able to fix them. See where you went wrong and fix them. And I think we've done that now. Where we were saved, I think we didn't go into precious metals. A lot of value managers, or the local value managers in particular, really liked gold and platinum companies. Thankfully, we didn't see the value there. So we went into diversified, which obviously hurt. All commodity or all mining companies have come off, but they haven't come off as strongly as some of the precious metal counters.
One of your big investments was in Anglos.
Yes, that's correct.
Which actually came down a lot. But if you look at a company like Kumba, which came down a significant amount, and it's around 30 rand at the moment, it is as close to rock bottom, pardon the pun, as it can be. Would you look at a share like that?
Yeah, I suppose Kumba, it's fallen, incredibly hard. And as you say, it now sits at 30 rand. Nothing stops it going very quickly to 20 rand. And then you lose a third of your investment. So that's the risk. So whilst, the 30, from where it's come from, the 30 rand to 20 rand doesn't look like a big jump. It's 30% of your investment if you go in now. So there's definitely still a risk there. If iron ore prices, stay lower for longer, there's undoubtedly a risk. I know they're doing a hell of a lot of restructuring. But there's too many uncontrollables there for a single commodity. So as you mentioned, we've been in Anglos, we invested in Glencore as well. These are the diversified, so you don't have single commodity risk. We prefer being there at the moment as opposed to the likes of a Kumba. But it does look very attractive at the moment. Obviously, the dividend is now a thing of the past. Hopefully, at some point, that comes back. But I think they're price takers in this market. I think there's a risk that there could still be some downside. But as you've seen with the gold companies in the recent months, when these things correct, they correct very quickly. If you're not in it, you'll miss that big jump. But unfortunately, that's part of asset management.
Absolutely. One of your funds is the Superdogs Fund, which is a very interesting fund, and you hold many shares there that you don't see in many other collective investments. Can you tell us about this fund and why you focus on these uncommon shares, CAP, Peregrine, Clientele Life, Ansys, SabWest, combined motor holdings, those type of companies?
Yeah, so the Superdogs portfolio was born out of a study that Adrian Saville used to do in the early 2000s. It was a live study. Every year he would form a portfolio just going through the markets, only industrials and financials. Resources were excluded for the very specific reason which I spoke to earlier, that they, looking at trailing multiples doesn't mean a hell of a lot from a valuation point of view. So it's looking purely at trailing PE numbers over the past year. And then within each subsector, you choose the top three, or when I say the top three, the cheapest three. They have to be profitable, so they can't have negative earnings. But then you'll choose the lowest three companies, or the lowest the three companies with the lowest PE ratios in each subsector, and hold it for a year. So basically, what you're investing in is the deepest value companies on the market, based on a very simple trailing metric. That study, which was a live study, did exceptionally well. And in the late 2000s, Adrian decided to launch it as a fund, and it became known as the Superdogs Fund. So every year it's a pure quantitative fund, so there's no specific stock research that goes into it. We do put an overlay, a quality overlay onto it now. So if a company's trailing on a P ratio of 2 and there's huge business risk, or you know, their balance sheets, they're overgeared, or if there's any type of risk, we won't invest in that. But more or less, it's a quant driven. At the beginning of each year, we invest in the company. So whilst you see a number of smaller names there, it's not a small cap fund. There obviously are a lot of small companies in there, but there's nothing that prevents it from investing in any of the larger companies, provided they're on the correct valuation.
But the fund has performed really well, much better than your equity fund.
Yes, I suppose that's a function of one specific thing. And it's purely a financial and industrial fund. There's no resource exposure there. So obviously we know what resources have done over recent times. So then you'll expect it to, you know, just purely based on that fact, irrespective of what the shares are, of what shares you hold in there, it's going to outperform. And then obviously there's a number of different holdings. There's a lot more companies, so it's more diversified than our past few equity portfolio is. There's obviously different names in there that obviously perform, you know, don't perform in line with our house view. So hence you'll get the divergence.
Obviously you are a value investor and you stick to your guns. But we are seeing some headwinds, blowing against the local market. Are you going to change your strategy or be more conservative in the short and medium term?
Look, we're not going to change our stripes if we've, you know, the market we've gone through, there's no hiding the fact over the past 5 years, you know, value managers have underperformed substantially. We haven't changed our stripes through this period. We're not about to do that now. We can't influence how the market prices shares that we invest in. What we can influence is what shares we invest in, and we want to ensure that we invested in these good quality businesses that grow their NAV or net asset value over time. If the market wants to price it on a PE of 5 or a PE of 25, we can't influence that. We can only wait for that to happen. And sometimes we have to wait a very long time. In this market, obviously, you know, as we spoke about earlier, we are in a low economic growth cycle at the moment. So locally facing companies, which are the companies that are attractively priced at the moment, they are going to struggle. So we need to ensure that where we invest in sectors that we think could face some headwinds over the short term, that we're in the best businesses in those sectors. And I alluded to Wilson Bailey Homes. There's numerous others that we can talk about. So we want to ensure that we invested in such businesses. And then we need to be patient and wait. And, you know, we've been waiting a long time now.
Can you give us a few examples of those other businesses apart from Wilson Bailey Homes?
Yeah, sure. There's, you know, within our resource sector, we don't, whilst I alluded to, you know, some of the diversified miners that we invested in, we aren't overweight mining companies. We've invested in a lot of resource-facing companies. And then another example would be a Master Drilling. Which it's not a very well-known business. He has a business, it's run out of Fochville, which is near Potchefstroom, so it's a very unusual place to find such a business that I've been talking about. But they've been developing their own RP for a number of years, and what they do is they do raise bore drilling. So this is, you know, they can drill holes for mines at, you know, exceptionally fast rates and at
a lot cheaper than
than what miners can do at the moment. These guys have exposure around the world. They're drilling holes in Latin America, in Europe, in Africa, in Australia. You know, so they've got this global diversification. It's a local company. It's local costs. You know, and here's a company that when you look, you know, if you go and look at what the financial reports show you and you look at what the market's done, you know, it gives you two very different stories. We don't think that the market's rewarded this business for the type of business that it is. They are the only company in the world that can drill such holes. And at the mining in Darwa this week, they unveiled a new drill that should be able to drill a lot quicker, a lot faster, at a lot cheaper rates. And this suddenly starts making previous projects that were unfeasible, suddenly they become feasible. So there's another example. I can give you yeah. more, but yeah, so those are the sorts of businesses that we invest in at the moment.
Thank you, Andrew. That was Andrew Didburner. He is the Chief Investment Officer of Cannon Asset Management.